This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome back. Now, let's pick up where we left off.
We're Luna.
And this is Gayotic. Our podcast about absolutely nothing and yet everything, hosted by us homosexuals.
We all share one brain cell.
Oh my God. I'm Josette.
I'm Katie.
I'm Naomi.
The three of us have been in a band together for years. We've been friends for a decade, and we've been gay since the beginning of time.
Oh, yes.
Wow, rad.
Well, we're so excited to have you on the pod, yeah. And we're also quaking in our boots because this is one of the stupidest podcasts, I think, that
with one of the smartest
with one of the smartest humans. Yeah, so we were really, really honored that you wanted to come on. But yeah, we are probably not going to do justice to...
No, this is great.
Your big boy brain.
I think the problem...
Big boy brain.
The problem is that I think I'm going to have to spend the rest of my life convincing people that I'm mostly just like a silly little goose all the time.
Oh, okay. I think this is a chance.
People are like, imagine... Like, I preserve all of my focus and seriousness for the work, I suppose.
Sure.
But outside of that container, I'm mostly just kind of goofy.
Yeah,
I mean, I can relate in a way because I think it took us a long time. Like, I mean, our first record is fucking devastating and not really silly at all.
The first two, I would say.
Yeah. But when we're making our work, like even that whole time we were
goofing,
like surviving it by being silly goofs.
Yeah,
I mean,
so I think this is your big shot actually, because we're planning on this podcast being
big shot, small,
extremely
podcast.
Famous. So yeah. I think this is your big shot for. Really getting that message out to the world. Hanif is a silly goose.
I can't wait. I listened to some episodes on the plane. I was very excited.
Of course you did.
Oh no.
No, they were great. I loved Caleb's and I loved Phoebe's a whole lot.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Phoebe's was a little bit serious, I guess.
I don't even remember what we talked about. How?
I only kind of remember. I mean, Caleb.
Caleb, we were talking about John Wayne Gacy and I do know that.
Yeah.
But because I'm a dirty little freak.
Maybe we were talking about like Flanner. The thing about Phoebe that's interesting is she does remember every part of every book that she's read. So
yeah.
Naomi has the same disease.
Yeah. Like she'll find out that I've read a book and then she'll like make a reference to some part of it. And I'm like, oh no, I'm like reading it and it's good. And then I'm forgetting.
It's going away. Yeah.
And then it's going away. I'm just doing it to have something to distract my brain before I fall asleep.
Yeah.
But yeah, regardless, thank you very much for coming on. And thank you just for like, fucking supporting us.
Of course. I'm such a big fan.
One of my like things that I was most proud of from last year was like making your list of artists that, you know.
That did
cool. Was it like
thing.
Shows that you liked or was it records?
It was both. I don't go to as many shows as I used to. And a part of that is because I have seen, like, I don't know how to do the math, but I've seen at least like 100,000 shows in my life. I've just seen so many shows.
Yeah. Totally.
Because you're like an emo kid.
Yeah, I like grew up on the punk scene.
What's your background?
Yeah, I grew up on the punk scene in the Midwest. And I grew up on the punk scene in the Midwest in like the early 2000s where, you know, there were some weeks where I was going to shows like 5-6 times a week, you know?
Yeah.
And so at this point in my life, it just kind of takes a lot to get me out of the house to a show. Not because I'm apathetic, but just because I've seen a lot. And I think the vibes at shows are just different now than, you know, and I feel like I'm an elder millennial, so I'm becoming the like, you know, grumpy old person on the porch and shit. But if I love a record, I just really want to see it animated live. And so I loved y'all's show in Columbus, you know, it's getting better, but Columbus went through a stretch where we just like no one was coming here.
I love coming to Columbus. Yeah. It's literally one of my favorite places to go on tour. It's also good food in Columbus, and it's just like I can go outside, and I really enjoy it over there.
Yeah.
How did you like? I feel like you were maybe one of the most prolific music consumers I have ever heard of. How did you like? When did this start? Like, how do you keep up with it?
Yeah,
I can't imagine. Even being a musician, I'm like, I don't even listen to that much music.
I feel like we tried more, like like diligently earlier on in our career, and now I don't know. Like, it's a little bit. Lazy. It's a little harder now because there's so, you know, like you walk into a Cheesecake Factory and there's so much on the menu. It's like, God damn, what the fuck am I gonna get?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the easiest answer is I spend a lot of time alone in my house. But I think
like all good writers do.
Yeah. Which is hard. I'm trying not to be that kind of cliche, but I think I'm the youngest of four and I just kind of conditioned myself to spend time alone as a kid. You know, I spent a lot of time alone in my college years. I was also an athlete. And so like, even in my college years when I was playing sports, I still craved time alone. And so
totally.
I'm just really rigorous about not missing something that could change my life. You know, like I think what I love about music is that there's opportunities to have these revelations that for me only come through music and text, you know? And that means, with that said, I'm also very good at like dropping out of an album if I'm not into it early, like pretty early. I can tell where something's not going the way I want. But yeah, I have a pretty rigorous like schedule of seeking out new stuff and then making a playlist of all that new stuff on Friday. And then Saturday through Monday, I listen to all the new stuff. And then the stuff that I love, I add to like a year long revolving playlist that just continues to accumulate with stuff I fuck with.
Holy fucking shit. How long have you been doing this for?
I've been doing that since like 2014. And
that's such a good idea. I was literally just thinking that it kind of sounds like it's one of those things that you just have to keep. It's like journaling.
Yeah.
It's like you have to keep at it.
Right.
And then you'll have a page every day for your entire year, and then it won't be as like intimidating of a task.
It sounds like it's very faith based though.
For sure.
Because I mean, I agree with you. Like a lot of people would say, like, oh, it's just so rare these days that I'm gonna find something that I actually like. And I feel like with you, like there is this rigor that is kind of maybe based in like a faith that you will have another one of those moments.
Yeah,
and faith in the sense of like it might not actually happen.
But it's worth chasing. But you know, some weeks I'm like, well, there's just nothing here for me, and that's also fine.
Yeah,
like, the reality is too many people are making too many albums at the same time, and
that's a fact.
Some of them got to stop.
Yeah.
Not us, but some of y'all
someone
stop.
Else.
And I just, you know, it's hard to discern what is something valuable to keep listening to, or what artists. It's even harder if there's an artist I really love, and they make a record that maybe isn't for me. Not even bad, but just kind of like this is the one that's not for me. When I was a younger consumer of music, I used to just listen to the shit over and over until I convinced myself it was, you know, it's like when you're in a tenured relationship with a person and shit starts to go south, but you're like, well, you know, if we just keep running it back, if we just do the same thing we've been doing, maybe something will click. And thankfully I've grown out of that with music. Hopefully I've grown out of it with the interpersonal relationship as well.
Yeah, man. I mean, I have a lot of respect for that. And I also, I mean, you do strike me as just like a really sensitive human and deep feeler. And I don't know, when I read your like art criticism, I think there's a lot in there that is also informed by more painful emotions like grief and like loss. And I think that it just feels like those things are super connected with you. And that was something that we ended up talking a lot about in our third album cycle. And it was also, it's very funny reading some of your essays, like the essay on Chance the Rapper.
Yeah.
There's a lot in there, which I think you wrote in like 2016, 2017.
Yeah, 2016.
Yeah. And there's so much in there about like joy and what makes joy meaningful, but also like what can make it meaningless if it's not paired with like radical action.
Totally.
Also like making art and having fun at the same time. It just seemed like you were on a lot of tips, like way before we were on them, or thinking about a lot of questions before we were thinking about them. But I think we ended up talking a lot with this last album cycle about joy, but it was like the sense of our capacity for joy being greater because we each have grown through like chapters in our lives where we knew pain really intimately. And we, you know, like I personally have had times where I wasn't connected to like wanting to keep living like chasing things that were good about life. And then like that is what now informs, I guess, any rigor that I do have. I'm in a lot of awe of the discipline that you've built into your life of like finding the reasons that life can be good. But for me, it was just like, yeah, that's a necessity. And like, also I can feel there's a fucking quote about like pain being carved into you and that becoming a vessel for like the amount of joy that you can hold,
right,
you know,
right.
I see that in you a lot.
Yeah. I mean, so I think for me, it was important. I lost my mom when I was 13 and I went through an era of my life in my late teens and early 20s where I was just losing friends on the scene I was coming up on pretty regularly.
Yeah.
And I began to understand grief as something that isn't an obstacle to conquer, perhaps. In a way, I was raised Muslim, and in Islam, it's like there's a timeline, there's a clock set on how long you can grieve, right? Like after the funeral, you get like 7 days, and you're supposed to move on in whatever way possible. Pair that with the fact that I grew up as an athlete in this kind of like hyper-masculine setting where I was taught that everything is an obstacle that can be overcome if you just try, work, et cetera, et cetera. And so it took until I was like 23 for me to realize that grief wasn't one of those things. And I think that is how I got more comfortable personally with the desire to want to stay alive more consistently. I mean, there were years in my early 20s where I didn't think I would make it through, right? But it's this idea that if grief is to be ever present, if grief is to kind of make a home in all of us and be immovable, then I think we deserve to be good stewards to it. We deserve to be gentle to it. And it in turn might be gentle to us, but absence and loss, you know, I realized last year that for the first year since my mother passed, I can't really really clearly remember what her voice sounds like. I can remember what her laugh sounds like. She laughed. I like a loud laughing person, and my mother was a very loud laugher. She laughed with a kind of seriousness, the way that some people may approach singing or anything else. But I can't remember her speaking voice. It's kind of blurry to me. And that's a new kind of grief. Whenever, I mean, Lord willing, if I live beyond the age my mother lived, that will be a new kind of grief. And so to understand that grief is kind of revelatory, it offers these endless doors that we're going to have to continually walk through and walk through and walk through. I just have to find some, I have to counterbalance that reality. And I have to really curate a capacity to feel deeply about everything. I think sometimes people approach my work as only sad, or it's kind of like, well, this is only sad, but I think I don't really reject that. I suppose, you know, everyone feel what you will. But I also think that my capacity for feeling anything is as the depth is there for everything, not just sadness. And so I thankfully have a deep capacity to feel love and excitement and sadness and rage and all these things that make up a life. And, you know, I feel really required to cultivate that depth, because if sadness is the only thing, or if sadness is the emotion that reaches the deepest part of me and that's it, I don't necessarily like myself, and I don't think anyone else would like me.
Yeah.
Social responsibility to be silly.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a way.
Yeah, exactly.
What were you going to say, Nate?
What you're saying brings to mind something that I was thinking about, like, while we were touring, and it's kind of like, it's not heavy, it's just like, it's just a bit heady. Like, hopefully people will be willing to roll with it, but it's like, I have such a beef with the contemporary iteration of postmodernism that we're living in, and how it proliferates this sort of like, yeah, the world is fucked and nothing's ever going to change, like whatever sort of mentality. But to me, that feels so so white and so straight and so male. And like to be willing to like give up hope on stuff for me feels so privileged almost. Like, yeah, you have nothing. If you are a nihilist and you're or a postmodernist and you believe that everything's fucked and nothing's going to change, so why should it matter? I'm just going to like smoke cigarettes and read theory. Like, to me, that's just an expression of the privilege that you already have living in this world. Like, you don't, your stake in things changing is actually different than mine or different from yours. Like, that, just that, resonates with
I feel like,
that feeling I've been having.
I mean, I was, I think like nihilism, a lot of things were hard and remain hard, I think, for me to kind of teach and train myself out of, right? Because I think there are privileges I fold into that nihilism is actually probably, like, if I left myself alone, if left to my own devices, I would trend towards nihilism. If I did not
I
have,
think I would too, to be honest.
Right. It's, that's the thing. I think many of us would, but we, if we're lucky, we love people who are not us. We love people for whom the stakes are different. The stakes of survival are just different. And, you know, for me, I just, I can't, there are points where I have to take into account the fact that I love a great many people who have different and or higher stakes of survival than I do. And it's not really moving shit if I'm just like, well, good luck. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm
gonna be kicking it. Good luck.
And like, and in that sense, like not, it makes it more important to, like be silly, have like try to enrich your life and move it towards, you know, a capacity to feel like joy and happiness that is from a real place of like, I kind of need this or shit's pretty dark for me. So, you know, roll with it. Try to have a feeling. Something I'm working on.
Was there a big sense of nihilism like growing up in a Midwestern punk scene? Like I'm very curious about that picture. I'm from the North Shore. I'm from the northern suburbs of Chicago. But I was not in so much of a scene myself. I did go to school, the same high school as some of the members of Fall Out Boy.
did you?
And, yeah.
Iconic.
And Pete Wentz's mom was the, I think she maybe still works at North Shore Country Day, which was the high school, like the private school in my town. So that was I learned a lot about Fall Out Boy from the piece that you wrote about them, because I think you were at their first.
Yeah, I was
show.
At the show
That's
where they
so sick.
I was at the show where they got their name, where they didn't have a name, and then an audience member gave them their name. I mean, I will
That's
say,
insane.
Isn't that crazy?
Deep abiding love for those dudes. Like, truly, the band does not mean the same to me as it did when I was younger. I didn't really get into going punk shows until I got my own car, which was senior year.
Okay.
But if you didn't in Columbus, like I grew up on the east side of Columbus, and if you didn't have, that's like a neglected area overall. So like, if you didn't have a car, you kind of couldn't get to where the shows were happening.
Right.
And
right.
If you were like a young black punk specifically, at that point in Columbus, at least, it was sometimes tricky to get in the shows in general. You had to go to like Dayton or Chicago or Detroit, where it was a little more like black punk friendly.
Sure.
Like literally they're going to like bar you out of the venue.
No, just it's just kind of like,
just treat you shitty.
Yeah, like you figure out like where is the venue where you're going to have to maybe fight, and how up for fighting are you, you know?
Yeah.
Like the crew I rolled with was all kind of like black punks, and I was thankful. My pal Tyler, who I wrote about in Fall Out Boy Forever, who's the anniversary of his passing is in like 2 weeks. But he was like way bigger than me. And the key always was you got to find the punk who was like definitely bigger than me. I've always been short. And I don't really, I can, you know, back then it was like, now I probably can't fight. But back in my 20s, it was like, I can fight. I just don't want to, you know? Like, I'd prefer not to fight. But here's a large person who at least scares people.
And so it's helpful.
There's that kind of math, I think, that has to be.
We have that person. We have that person in our touring crew. Yeah.
Ivan.
Yeah, our production manager.
But
is
he's
this
the most
giant
sensitive one of all of us.
Yeah. I wonder if you met him when you came backstage, or
I think
you,
I
might,
did.
You might have seen
he's
him
like,
at
the
show.
He's the biggest guy who would be around us, and he's bearded.
Yeah, he's just fucking massive.
He's also like at the shows crying.
Yeah, I think sensitivity and capacity for fighting by way of protection. I think those are like twin impulses.
Yeah,
totally. I've never gotten
my ass kicked twice.
And let's get into it.
No, I just like, dude, I think to be honest, like I went to a school that was not so good. And there were a couple years where I had there was a person in my class who was titillated by me in some way. She was like,
absolutely titillated.
She was, something about me activated her, but it expressed itself for her in sort of just giving me a hard time. Like, mm-hmm. I was a little bit like I was a good student, but I was like, I was a talker. And so I'd be like leaning back in my chair and like talking, you know, like my knees sort of like holding me back and like talking shit to people in my class. And she would come up and like kick my chair down.
Oh, no.
And
then
and then I would like get up and like chase her out of the school.
Which is
like,
what she wanted.
This happened a few times. Right. And then I have been punched in the face. It's a formative experience. I think
I've never been punched. I've been slapped a bunch.
It hurts.
I punched
my best friend in the face. Uh-huh.
Yeah, ask a question.
Can I ask a question about the person who was kicking your chair and then running away?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, I was gonna say, is this some kind? This was like a play for affection, right? Or like attention that might lead to affection?
I couldn't really tell. I think it was multi-layered. I think it was complicated because. I went to a very diverse school until middle school, uh-huh. And then I went to a pretty white school, uh-huh. And I'm mixed, and she was one of the only other students of color in my class.
Uh-huh. Oh, there it
and,
is.
And yeah, so I think there was something, and maybe there was like a queer element. I can't really tell. Retrospectively, but she wanted to beat my ass bad.
I wonder if we looked her up now, she would be like,
I don't
queer.
Know. And then there was another girl who was a white girl who also, she would just like, she would fuck with me, but I was way taller than her, so she didn't really try it.
I wouldn't want to fight you.
I was huge. Like, I was like five, I was like a 9-year-old who was like 5'6". I was like, it's huge.
Whoa.
Yeah, and then I stopped growing, but yeah.
Say, 5'6" is like how tall I am right now.
I was huge.
Naomi's
like
tall. You're
I was
like
huge. I'm 5'9" now, but I stagnated for a bit. I leveled out towards the end.
Isn't
there.
It like strange though that this? I was thinking about this recently because I was in a phase where I was watching romantic comedies for no real reason. I think I was just like end of the year, tired and on the couch and wanting to feel things. And I found myself like really frustrated. Well, particularly there were some queer rom-coms that move me, but the ones that are kind of like the heteronormative container of the rom-com is like, and I'm sure that's always been this way and I'm just now noticing it a little more, but it's always it follows this arc of like two people being horrible to each other for act 1, 2 and perhaps 3, and then there's that tension, supposedly tension, builds up, but there's no real in-between arc. It's just like we're mean to each other and now we're kissing. And
is it the patriarchy like and abuse?
Yeah.
Like, to be honest.
It tripped me out because I was like, maybe this is just what it, like, I mean, I know this isn't what it is, but maybe this is just the imagination of how people imagine this type of shit going. But like, I don't know. There was some Netflix rom-com I watched where as a part of this kind of horsing around the fall in love type shit, someone like called the cops on someone else. I was like, listen, if she calls the cops on me, I think I'm out, you know? Like,
no, I mean, I do
that
think...
That is legit, though. I feel like I was confused. I don't know. I feel like I'm still kind of dealing with a bit of, like, a legacy within me of, like, I don't know what the hell it is. That's what therapy's for. But, like, needing affection to also be tempered with like someone giving me a hard time.
Absolutely.
A little bit.
I am mean to people that I like, yes.
But okay.
But some people, I think maybe it's just social conditioning. Well, it could be the time we grew up in, but I do like, I don't want you to come up and, you know, break my tailbone.
I mean, I hung out with my grandma for like 10 days recently. I have two living grandmas, which is fucking amazing.
That's crazy.
So my dad's mom, Zita, is 91 and super Irish Catholic, or I mean, I guess she's Czech, but Irish Catholicism is the religion.
Yeah.
And she is so sarcastic. She was reading me left and right. And like, but she's really funny. And I was like, okay, this is where my dad got it from. Like, and this is really how my family like does show affection to each other.
That's kind of us to each other in a way, but we do say
that's,
we love each other.
I was just
thinking
about
this.
It's
a little bit sad and it is giving repression.
Well,
but
is it just giving, I don't know, is it just
It also shows
vulnerable?
Up though, not that I'm like, sorry to do like an in-person or like a whatever lyrical analysis, but I think it also shows up in your lyrics too, in the songs. Like I really
oh,
love.
Fuck. This is my dream.
I really like. I really adore Taken. I like adore that song.
Yeah, that one's the most fucked up.
But it made I was playing the y'all did the thing at Electric Lady, and I was playing that version in my car for a friend of mine who wasn't hip to y'all's music, and I was talking through the idea of wanting to extract someone from a relationship so that they can be with you as a measure of worth, or as a measure of like a feeling like you are achieving something, not even as a measure of maybe as a measure of affection, but more as a measure of just wanting to calculate one's worth in relationship to another person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was telling my pal this, and she was like, yeah, I get that. That's like pretty fucked up though. And I was like, yeah, but I actually don't think that's, I think maybe the end result we say that's fucked up, but I actually don't think that emotional impulse is that different from several other ways that desire manifests itself in with different stakes, be it like watching someone eat something that you did not want before, but seeing them enjoy it so much is the engine for that desire, right?
Yeah.
I think it just all, I'm going to say, I feel like it just always just goes back to mommy and daddy.
But it's also like we're social creatures.
Wanting to be loved.
Yeah, totally. Like that's
well, and it is interesting because that is one of the songs, and I don't want to pull a curtain up too much, but I did write that song like not based on, it was based on I met somebody who was engaged, but I did not pursue that in any way. It was a complete fantasy song, and it was like, if I was going to fuck with this situation, like what would happen, and why am I playing, like let's play the tape forward and also let's play the tape back, like why am I doing this,
you know? Like why is the impulse there to begin
with? and there is, you have to kind of generalize. I appreciate like you throwing in that, like, you know, in reality there's like so much more gray area for these things, but I think on a lot of the second record there was this general feeling of like, and everything I do is because of my trauma.
I mean, I gotta be honest, I think that's where we're all at all the time, even if we're not aware of it. We're just consciously like acting out everything on each other, and it's just like your life on repeat from the ages that you weren't completely a conscious person and your frontal lobe was being developed.
I think that's a great thing to leave our listeners with.
Yeah, and now we're going to take a break, but our break is actually just us saying we're going to take a break and we can keep talking.
Let me start by saying this show, Gaiotic, is sponsored by BetterHelp.
How are you guys doing right now? Speaking of BetterHelp,
not good.
Yeah.
Well, you know, living in the world as we're experiencing it now can often be, you know, at times you'll feel elated and at other times you'll feel very depressed. And I think we oscillate between those two emotions frequently. And
absolutely,
it's hard to do that by yourself.
Definitely.
Well, that's why it's so nice to have a therapist that you can talk to help bring you back to what you care about in life, or just talk about, you know, the everyday problems of existence.
Yeah.
You know,
we are very pro therapy as a band. I'm also pro like getting help where you can find it. And what I love about BetterHelp is how accessible it is for people to try. I have a lot of friends where BetterHelp was like the first therapist that they
I was going to mention a friend
found.
Of ours yeah. who had a BetterHelp, who found his therapist through BetterHelp as an individual that travels quite a bit and mm-hmm. needed to be able to do it over the phone. And yeah, it's like starting therapy can be a lot like starting to date, and mm-hmm. it makes you feel very nervous, and you do have to find the right person, and mm-hmm. BetterHelp can, you know, kind of facilitate that process a little bit.
Definitely. So we encourage all y'all to visit betterhelp.com/gayotic today, and you can get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/gayotic. Go to therapy, y'all. Go,
please.
You're listening to Gayotic? Go to therapy.
Put the podcast down and get help with BetterHelp.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're back from our
break.
And we're back from our break.
Awesome. It was so good. You have no idea how hard it is for me to not be like, and now what are any other thoughts that you have about that we have written?
It's true. It's true because you care about music
and
so
I'm saying,
deeply.
And now please write our next bio. Yes. Oh my God.
And see something in us that we cannot see within ourselves and extract it.
Also, that's musician trauma of needing validation.
Yeah, and that also
you.
Has to do from mommy and daddy.
Like, play, go
Which,
on
yeah,
the
it
stage.
It all traces back. It all traces back.
But I, it all does.
100.
I will say that, you know, like one thing that draws me to your work and has for a while is actually how well y'all kind of attacked the concepts or the realities of desire, various mm-hmm. modes of desire. I'm a big desire-driven person. I don't even know if I... For me, it's easier to delineate a love song and a song that is about the pursuit of love, which I think are mm-hmm. two different things. Yeah. I think they can be, one can be the other and all that. But I kind of, the reason I fuck with like, say, a Carly Rae Jepsen is because so many of her songs are kind of just like, I don't really even want the guy. I just kind of yeah. want to chase after him for a while. And then I don't really care what he does, you know?
Right.
And, I think that's everybody all the time.
It.
Everybody
yeah,
just
you
wants.
Know, like, You want the middle part, or the, I guess not even the, for me.
You want the
I
moment
think,
before.
You want the liminal space.
Right. You want it's the liminal like, space. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's what's so, I prefer, I think most, this is so cliche performance studies vibes, but like the liminal space and the liminoid space is like the most interesting space for like art to happen within.
I think that's
you
also
saying
like
liminoid is such a flex.
Yeah, I think that's the sexiest
well
place.
It's because I said
microphone.
Liminal the other day, and then I meant liminoid.
I know you thought that, and I'm sorry.
Wow, it's okay.
Crazy. Well, at least
I've never
use
even
a big
heard
word.
That word before. I didn't even know that was a word.
Naomi has quite
you
the
can
vocab.
Have that one.
Yeah,
me.
You can have it.
Liminoid.
We just request to be well. Actually, Naomi needs to be quoted.
From what I recall, is just like. A proto-liminal experience. So like something happening in the, for example, like a bar mitzvah, like the ritual of like, I'm going
becoming
into this
man.
Situation and becoming a man yeah. through this ritual. The ritual is the liminal space, right?
Right.
So it's pretty specifically like happening within the confines of like ritual. Mm-hmm. Whereas like, artistic expression, us being on stage in a concert, that sort of like unreal space within the concert where a ritual is happening, but it's not exactly religious,
right,
is not. Liminoid.
Okay.
It's just to differentiate
Jesus,
the two more
Jesus,
specifically.
Cuckoo bananas. Right.
Yeah.
Can I bring this
guys? It might not sound religious for you all, but I do feel like there are religious experiences happening.
Absolutely.
Well,
Absolutely.
We want that. That is literally the driving force.
We're pretty spiritual, I think, ultimately.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we make the music we make, seriously.
Yeah.
But I think, well, for me, what I also, this maybe sounds creepy, I hope not, but I think a part of loving live music for me is I just love watching other people witness live music.
Totally.
That's the coolest part. I saw Beyonce, like, I love Beyonce, but I wouldn't describe myself to have, like, I'm not a good fan of things, but it was the most interesting experience I think I've ever had at a live show where people were leaving their
bodies and you understand why people want to like that makes me have the impulse to make art so people can have that experience. It's just fucking,
it allows you to imagine what works. If we're to talk about like liminal spaces or why desire or the idea of crushes obsesses me, is because even taking in live music or these kind of things allow you to imagine a different reality than the one that you're actually
totally
in, you know what I mean? Yeah. Which is why I think the crush or the pursuit of desire is so much more seductive than the reality of living with like alongside a person. Mm-hmm. Like for example, since we're all friends here and we're getting mm-hmm. personal, I went last year, like last summer, I went through a breakup, and in the midst of that process, mm-hmm. I was like talking to my therapist about how I was kind of on some shit where I was like, I don't really, you know, like I don't actually need a relationship, but I do need my impulse for desiring others fueled somehow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she's like, I don't know if that's sustainable. Like you cannot just go through the world latching on to the imagination of another person at their highest possible form because you don't know the reality of their lives, right?
Why not?
I know I'm like dead, but I wish I could.
My exact thing was like, I mean, shit. Like,
I think that's, I could at least get a few wants.
Years out of that, though.
You know? Are you sure? I mean, have you tried it?
I have like a way more extensive history of like fantasy and crushes than I do on like with actual intimacy and like same. Close relationships.
Yeah. Because who wants that?
I think that's part of the reason why it took me so long to figure out that I was gay, because I had a lot of my most intense like romantic obsession has actually been over men. And then
totally.
Spoiler alert, even want to.
Is it because you're fantasizing about the life that you should be having in terms of it's what was projected on
my limbic system? I don't know.
No, but it is kind of funny. I wonder if it's just like because of trauma. And like we're just
I think it's still powerful to be desired by, like, it's the same thing you were talking about, like measuring your own self-value based on like who desires you or like who you can get.
I totally agree. That's when I didn't know I was good looking until I had men desire me as opposed to me getting female attention. Like I used to get female attention growing up, and I was like, that it didn't really matter to me, even though I'm obviously gay. But I didn't know that I was a creature that could be seen as beautiful until I received male attention much later on in life.
Yeah.
I never received male attention or validation ever, but I think it's contributed to something that I'm also now working through in therapy.
Yeah, but I needed that attention.
I don't, there, it's difficult. It is difficult for me. Your dad is correct. It's difficult for me. Your dad, Jonathan, you're correct.
My dad wants to be so close to Naomi. Like he crawls out of his skin for closeness.
I know. It's difficult. I was raised by my mom. And I think due to that and a variety of other sort of circumstances in my upbringing, it led to me sort of having a difficult time respecting older men.
Uh-huh.
So it's difficult for me to connect to a lot of men who are not my age or around my age. I think like it has always been a bit hard for me to connect with them on a level other than like friendship. If that makes sense.
Well, I would hope that you're not trying to connect with a lot of older men. Like, when...
No, I mean, but I'm going to say this. Jesus it's hard Christ. For me to respect them.
Well, like, in some ways, it's okay.
It's difficult for me. And it was hard for me to connect with boys and young men my age for any other it didn't even cross my mind, really, to connect with them. Actually, in reality, I had like fantasies on occasion about like a boy that I would think was cute or whatever, but there was no like,
What about you and girls? You're famously, I think, the first straight guest that we've had.
That's the first straight guest you've had on the show.
I think everyone else has been queer in some ways.
Only. Okay, we'll see.
Wow.
Yeah,
we'll see how this goes.
Well,
unless this is a vehicle for you coming out, that I would also
this is also a safe space.
I think that would if I were, I am not going, but if I were to, I think there is a small subset of like people
would
please.
Who'd be Oh, yeah.
But I will say, totally. So one thing I do want to touch on about, like, it's been important for me as I've gotten older, and me and my bros, my fellas, to cultivate a space where we actually talk about each other's physical appearance in a way that is
totally
like complimentary and transparent, you know, like, because I didn't grow up around a lot of, like, growing up around a lot of straight men, particularly in the containers that I did, which were all like sports and music, until I got to the punk scene, it was a little like significantly more fluid. But before that, we just like didn't address each other. Like, if I asked my homie, like, do I look okay before leaving the house? Like, is this fucking outfit ridiculous? You know, it'd be like, oh, I don't want to talk about it. You know, that kind of thing. And so it's been cool as an adult, particularly as I entered my late 20s and 30s, to have friends where it's like, no, we're going to do that. Like, we are going to send each other fit pics. We're going to actually talk about each other's appearance so that we don't go into the world thinking that, not only thinking that only, that our affection and our expression of affection and based on how someone is appearing can only be projected upon to folks who are not straight men, but also just to create a language wherein we can, like, love each other in that way. It took a lot of work and a lot of unlearning, I think, the ways that straight men, the ways that we're kind of like conditioned to talk about each other.
Totally.
But it's an act of affection, an act of care.
Can it extend beyond just the outfit? Like, do you feel comfortable talking about, like, I don't feel good in my body today type of
always
thing?
Like, I think for me,
hell yeah,
one real revelation, particularly not even physically, but like emotionally, I think I've learned to talk about my emotions better through having men in my life where we just kind of trained each other to talk about what's happening in our heads, our bodies, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
Like, I know myself, and I know that, like, it's easy for me to isolate still. You know, I talk about all the things I've unlearned, but, you know, that shit, it's still easy for me to isolate and still easy for me in my head to be like, if I'm feeling anxious or depressed today, this is something I can conquer.
Yeah.
And I know that on those days where I believe that about myself, one, it's a lie, but it's also a lie that impacts the people I love.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just so much more useful to cut out that middle person and say, I need to get straight to the people I love and say, yo, straight up, like, I'm not really feeling good today.
Yeah, definitely.
It's so special. And, like, I can really relate to that with, I think when I made a decision, you know, because we've been in a band, well, I've known them since I was 20 and I'm now 30. And also, like, we've been through so much together. Like, Naomi and I dated for the first 3 years that we knew each other.
Do you want to know something fucking crazy?
What?
We were dating 10 years ago.
Because we old.
That's, because we
in a way
old.
That kind of sucks.
We I know.
In a way I hear that, I think,
I need that to not be true.
We met right around 10 years ago.
So we,
like,
so,
literally,
oh my God,
was probably
we were
happening
in, like, the
10
first
years
month
ago.
Of our relationship.
That's what
right
I'm
now.
Saying.
How does it make you feel?
It's so sweet. Like, it's honestly so cute.
Yeah, it is very cute. And but also it does make me think that, because that was the first time I was maybe going to go on antidepressants.
And then
I stopped,
like,
taking
I
them because I was like, I'm falling in love. But it makes me think, I wish I would have stayed on them.
You didn't. You got to do what you got to do.
But,
baby,
you know, life, the beat goes on.
Cuff It was playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even then, like, you know, in the first, like, years of our relationships together and being in a band, I was hiding, like, a lot of stuff that I was dealing with. And I say hiding, but it was still very much their problem.
Yeah.
Like, it was definitely my internal shit was their problem. And it wasn't, it was like a big, there's a huge, like, before and after of, like, when I made the decision of, like, okay, no matter how embarrassing it is, like, I got to tell them, like, the sketchy shit that I'm up to. Or, you know, like, what's going on in my head. And that was the biggest game changer for, like, actually being able to make changes in my life that could last. So I think that's amazing. I don't think there's going to be...
People see you. You know, your people's, like, it's like everything is a mirror, or everything can be a mirror. And I feel like the reason I rely so much on my friends for that shit is because it's like... You see me better than I see myself, or at least if you see me frequently enough, you see me better than I see myself. And if I'm fucking up, like, it's this whole thing of, I think, being in community and being deeply in love with your homies and your people is like, we're all accountable to each other. And so, like, if I'm fucking up consistently enough and you see it, it's your actual responsibility to tell me. I'm not saying you got to fix it, But it's your responsibility to tell me, at least, so that then we can take some next steps and be like, I'm maybe not the person who can fix this for you, but you got to get your shit together, you know?
When we're on tour, I don't mind talking about this, but I'm bipolar. And sometimes on tour, what do I ask to know? Sometimes I don't know.
We do, what do we say? We say we have like a code. Pineapple.
If I seem like I'm a little bit spicy, people will tell me, they'll ask me pineapple. Because I don't know when I'm, like, it's hard for me to have the awareness at times to know, like, I'm in a manic episode.
Yeah.
I'm lost in my own bullshit.
But we figured out that, like,
Katie hates me.
I can tell, like,
when Joe's being manic, Katie gets annoyed.
I will not have the thought, like, oh, Josette's getting manic. I will have the thought, Josette is so fucking annoying. And then I'm like, oh, she's manic. She's manic.
The only issue so far is that Katie doesn't know until after I figure it out. And then she's like, oh, I'm sorry I wasn't there for you, my friend.
I was really too annoying.
I actually just hated you.
Sorry, you were being too annoying for me to be there for you.
Yeah.
Are y'all are like, can I maybe, I know this is you're the ones asking questions, but can I ask a question?
No, please. We're just talking.
Y'all are so, I don't know, you know, obviously I talk to a lot of musicians who are in the position y'all are in where people, but I do think there's an intensity around you all that from a fan standpoint that is very good, but I often wonder how you receive it because it's like, I enjoy watching it from afar, but I feel like being immersed in it is a different thing. Intensity where people really map themselves onto you as individuals, but also through what you produce.
It's probably the hardest to be Katie.
I'm a little bit like, what are you talking about?
But I feel you go first.
The thought that I have off the top of my head whenever I think about this type of stuff or what we mean to other people, I'm ultimately very grateful because I think there's a level of adoration thrust upon certain musicians that strictly has to do with a projected fantasy of who that person is.
Right.
And that cognitive dissonance, I think, would be really difficult for me to deal with, especially if it was like, I know these people like me and they like my music and they also like me because I'm a very attractive man or something like, you know what I'm saying? Like where it's so like sexualized or something like that, or like a very attractive woman
or
something.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say something that's maybe like that you guys are going to hate me for saying.
I think it's
hard for me to wrap my head around it at all, but whenever I put a positive spin on it, it's that I see from the adoration reflected towards us an adoration towards like
our souls,
the ways that we love each other and how we are friends, and that's authentic and true. Yeah. And I get that. Like from an outsider perspective, I understand that. So that's how I find peace with it. Cause I know it's not about me.
Yeah.
And it's not even about Joe or about Katie. It's like
it's about Muna.
It's about Muna. It's about the music. It's about the stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so much easier. You know, that's like you're in a production of a play and someone really loved the way you were Hamlet. And it's like, thanks. I'm not Hamlet. But thank you.
I mean, you know what I mean. Muna is the fourth entity. You know what I mean. Muna is the fourth person. Yeah, it's the fifth element.
Shut up.
I mean, it's the thing that's outside of the three of us, which I think allows us to be a little bit more egoless.
Yeah.
It's like a helpful way to sort of
take your
understand why people feel the way that they feel.
The one thing. I mean, like going off of what you said, the thing that makes me feel the most sad and the thing that can hurt me the most is like when I feel like I'm
sexualized,
only getting praised like in that way.
Okay, so this is I watched the Pamela Anderson documentary last night.
I really want to watch
it. It's so fucking good. I really recommend it. And she's truly like a little Thich Nhat Hanh. Like she's so full of joy. And
are you serious?
Levity.
I can't wait to watch this.
It's so great. I really recommend it. And it did make me think about I think there's like a Tori Amos lyric, or maybe it's Ani DiFranco. It's one of my heroes. Like there's a lyric about
one of the girlies.
like, I think it's maybe Ani DiFranco. It's like something about like how hard it is to be the most beautiful girl in the room. And but like genuinely.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that I have a lot of like privilege in terms of like my physical incarnation. Like I get that it probably has helped me that I'm like a skinny white girl, like in terms of, you know, having some space.
We're all relatively conventionally of being attractive. Queer.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think that I am beautiful enough. Like, and this is where you guys are probably going to get annoyed, but it's like, I'm just trying to say, like, I don't actually feel like a ton of fear. And I am a femme. So if I like was a certain amount more beautiful, I would probably be like, have to deal with a lot more bullshit and like be living in a lot more fear where people would be sexualizing me or like trying to find out where I live.
Scary.
People do sexualize you though, I will say.
I get that, but it's
I want to correct what you're saying. I don't think it's that you are more or less beautiful. I think it's whether or not you are an incarnation of a beauty standard, how close you are to whatever beauty standard exists for the type of person
and,
that you are.
Right.
The patriarchy and like subjugation
and
of like
women. And so
that's
currently like, do you have an Instagram filter face or
Yeah.
do you have a different kind of face?
Yeah,
because
sure.
Those things like shift and move based off of like the whims and desires of straight men largely, right?
So, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Is Tori Amos one of your heroes for real?
Tori Amos is one of my heroes.
Katie is obsessed with Tori Amos.
I love. She's like also one of my. She's one of my favorite writers, like of all time. Any genre of writing, any world of writing, she's one of my favorite writers of all time.
Oh my fucking god! We need to go to a Tori show. I saw her for the first time in LA. We had just come back from a tour, and I was like a dead human. But my friend Shadi like convinced me to still go. Like I was like walked in like a zombie, and she revived me. Yeah, I mean. Prodigy on the piano,
truly.
So like so many, and has written so many albums.
Yeah,
like
she's so
talk
prolific.
About fucking discipline.
And they're all different. Also, I think she's such a beautiful interpreter of other people's songs.
Yeah,
like
she
I
is.
Think, which is hard to do. But you know, I adore her cover of "I Don't Like Mondays" because I think it actually really beautifully extracts the horror of that song. Which you know, I just think she's got. She has this beautiful cover of All Through the Night. And I love Cyndi Lauper a lot, but Tori Amos is like that. That's that Tori Amos one is like, that's the canon. That's the canonical one for me. And I just think that's actually hard. It's hard to hear something in someone else's writing or music or lyricism and reinvent it in the way that she so consistently does. I don't know. I adore her.
That is such a skill.
Yeah. I would love to. I'm always like, there's people often ask like, well, at this point in your life career, who would you like to interview? And I'm in my brain, I'm always like, well, there's no one really. But then when I'm done saying that, I'm like, fuck, it's probably her.
It's probably her. Yeah.
Yo, because you know that having a conversation with her would be astral.
Oh my God.
Like,
have you seen, the clip of her talking about watching elks having sex?
Yes.
She is unreal.
Yes.
And she's like, I mean, that is really something. And then she's like, I want to get in touch
Primal.
A little bit. She's like, I want to get in touch with that myself. I've been a little bit of a Dorito. Okay, I feel really compelled to, you know, we are navigating new territory as we do have a straight person on this podcast. Yes. And normally we talk about
gay shame.
Gay shame as in like what were your first inclinations of, oh my God, I might be gay.
Right.
And I think it would be permissible for you to
do the opposite.
To do the opposite.
The opposite.
Or even to just, I mean, I would be equally delighted really to hear about maybe the first time that you felt a little something, maybe had your first crush, who it was on, and had your first feelings.
A pang in your heart.
What was like your, or like a maybe an embarrassing early hookup story? Like, just give us a little something along those lines.
Well, a weird thing about me, though, you know, to be clear, I am straight. My first kiss was, or my second kiss was a boy. In part because my first kiss was, you know, I feel like when I was maybe 11, and I think, you know, I just grew up in a household, like, you know, my sister's queer and came out at a very young age, like came out when I was very young and she was still very young.
Wow, that's amazing.
And And I just kind of like lived in a neighborhood where gender expression even back then was just really fluid. I wonder if it's just I grew up in a neighborhood with like aesthetic gender expression was really fluid.
Yeah.
Part of me, as I think back on this, is likely because I grew up in a neighborhood with mostly Black folks who did not have a ton of money. And so that sometimes meant that like you just wear what was in the closet, you know, like if you came from a big house where you had like if you were a boy and you had like three sisters or whatever, the hand-me-downs were coming no matter what. So you just, you know what I mean? And so of course I wasn't processing this back then, but I think that's maybe what it was. But I say this to say, my first kiss was deeply unsatisfying to me, certainly as they sometimes are. And so my second kiss, I wasn't really thinking about it. You don't really think about it. You're just like, maybe this one will be, I'll try this other thing. And that was also unsatisfying though, not because it was a boy. I just was not very good at kissing at 11.
No one is.
No one.
How did you get yourself in a situation where you had a kiss available to you?
We were play fighting. We were like play wrestling.
Oh, cute.
And then, which I actually think is a very intimate, I mean, I don't know about it now, you know, but I think like now I'm not like running up on someone I have a crush on and like play fighting them.
No, but as a kid, for sure.
But as a kid, it's like a highly intimate, you know, your faces can be naturally close to each other.
Totally.
And I think for me as a kid, I was mostly just curious. And I was like, this face is available to me and seemingly interested, or at least like curious. I think when you're a kid, it's just like, I'm just curious.
Yeah, totally.
And so that's how I got into that. The very first time I was in a situation where I was hooking up with someone who I had a big crush on, I was a junior in high school, and it did not go well, in part because it was like during lunch, which you just did, you know, if you were in school and you get away, you go to someone's house during lunch, and that was a move. But the problem with that was you always run the risk of parents coming home.
Oh my God.
There was this situation where we were like getting into it, though not really getting into it, because I feel like that might have been my first time in general. So I was just like very nervous, which for me manifested itself by just like talking through, you know, I often joke about the Boys to Men song, I'll Make Love to You, which I don't really like, in part because it's a song that like narrates a sexual experience, but actually you know, it's just like a dude narrating every beat. But it's that just, when I was like 16, that was me. Yeah. When I was 16, I was like, okay, I'm going to take my shirt off, you know, that kind of shit.
Yeah, that's because, me today, baby.
because my narration led to these delays, the person I was in the throes of this with, her father came home. Aye. And I hid in a closet for 4 hours.
Yeah.
Because he didn't leave. God. Like he was like, I'm here. I'm back for the, you know, I'm back for the day. And so I didn't go back to school. I missed soccer practice. I was like in the closet, in her closet for 4 hours. And after that, we didn't talk, but we reconnected recently, not on some like romantic shit. She's got two kids and is married, but it was one of those things where she like saw my book in the bookstore, which to be clear, I think this has happened. I had like a, for lack of a better term, I had a very brief fuckboy stage. It ended really quickly because I was just got very exhausted with it. But in my early, in my like Warped Tour era,
I call it,
where it's just like you just make out people at Warped Tour because that's what you do. And so I've had these moments where women have been like, hit me up and been like, I saw your book in a bookstore. And I was like, I can't believe it. It's just the thing. It's like that motherfucker, you know, which I get. I'm like, and I'm always like, listen, I'm as surprised as you, you know, like, I'm just as surprised as you are. Like, I didn't think I'd go from hiding in a closet for 4 hours to writing some shit. But, you know, so yeah, I will say that I don't know if there is a moment for me. I recently considered the first time that I saw someone and thought they were physically attractive. And it was this dual thing where it was like, I saw Jody Watley on the cover of Jet magazine in my parents' house. And was like, that person is nice to look at. I was like 10 years old. You know, I was like, that must be what attractive.
Smoking.
Yeah. And so I think there's a lot of moments for me where I'm really thankful that my appreciation for, not this might sound shallow, I hope not, but my appreciation for physical beauty is like really vast because I just grew up around, I think, like beautiful people in general. Like my and that's just kind of like I just grew up around a lot of beautiful Black people and beautiful Black people who like did not have a lot of resources to tend to beauty in the way that like many people of different class structures do, but really tended to their beauty in these wonderful ways of like, you know, heating up hot combs on a stove and that kind of stuff where it's like resourceful. And, you know, like I talked a bit about like my how I cultivated these relationship with beauty and in internal and external conversations about beauty with my friends who are men. And some of that is because, like, I also grew up like watching men tenderly braid the hair of other men. I also go to a barber all the time, and my barber is a very tender person who like takes great care of like touching my face, you know. And so there's a way that intimacy and beauty align for me.
Well, but like this whole conversation to me has been very emblematic of like the idea that as humans, we all have like a huge array of intimacy needs. And like, it's actually very liberating to recognize that we're not limited to like getting those needs met by just one person, whether it's like having your bro tell you that you look good, or, you know, having like, or having a nice skincare routine. And I, to me, like that, as someone who for a very long time, I had very long periods of singledom, and has been like one of the most valuable lessons for me is, and I honestly do kind of associate it with queerness, although they beat me up for like trying to make everything queer that's not actually queer. But I was going to say like, there's actually something really queer about that, but.
No, you can say it.
I don't know. I will say that my expansive relationship with love and where love can be found, I think directly aligns with my expansive relationship with people broadly who are not, who like perhaps have different experiences of love than I have.
Yeah.
And so speaking of falling in love.
Okay, we're going to do the gay thing at the end.
This is how we end our podcast. I'm into it. So thank you so much for being here with us. I love y'all. And I love you, Katie.
I loved spending time with everyone. This was so wonderful. And I love you, Josette.
This conversation was a delight. And shockingly to everyone, I love you, Naomi. And I'll say it with my eyes open.
You did a good job.
So now you,
I always close my eyes.
You have to say that you love yourself.
Yeah. This is so
wonderful.
But
you don't have to. We encourage it.
No, I encourage it. Let me see if I can access this smoothly. Well, one, I will say that this has been a real pleasure. You know, I know that I have expressed many times exuberantly how much I admire y'all as not only writers and makers of music, but also how y'all move through the world. That thing that you mentioned about people connecting to you because of the bond that y'all have and how exuberantly that bond manifests itself on stage and everywhere. I think that's it. Like, that's the thing, you know, where I'm drawn to bands that not only have a bond, but that bond is ever present in the work, where it seems like when y'all are on stage or even in the songs themselves, it doesn't seem like y'all would want to be anywhere else in the world but with each other. And to me, that carries the music itself is great, but I feel like that surpasses even the greatness of the songs. And so thank you for allowing me to kind of be an audience to seeing that camaraderie up close. I think that I feel like I have grown in fallen in love a bit watching this conversation unfold or being a part of it unfolding. So thank you for that. And I love you, Hanif.
Oh, wow, that was beautiful.
Thank you so much. Wow. Yeah.
Gayotic is a production of HeadGum.
Created and hosted by us, the band Muna, but mostly we're known as the famous podcasters from the podcast Gayotic.
Our producer is Anya Kanovskaya.
And our associate producer is Ali Khan.
If you want to prove that you love us, feel free to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify or wherever people review podcasts. We might even pick your review and talk about it if it's a really good and really nice one.
You can subscribe to Gayotic on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher,
wherever you get your podcasts.
New episodes drop on hump day, Wednesday. One of the greatest days of the week, baby.
That's right. We do this regularly because we have fucking discipline.
You're listening to our voices right now, which sound pretty good. But guess what? The face cards don't decline either. So head over to our Instagram at whereismuna and like one of our photos. I mean, truly any dopamine hit we can get is helpful.
Meet you right back here next week.
That was a HeadGum podcast.